Hello and welcome to the Pink Bike Podcast. My name is Henry and this week I'm joined by Alicia, Sarah and Mike for the news preamble. Now, Mike, we're going to talk about some questionnaire stuff, some state of the sport stuff with Sarah and Alicia in just a moment. But this last week we saw a product release that was more expensive than some of its rivals, heavier and less stiff. Now, normally any one of those things would be considered a kiss of death for a new product, but there's something about the upside down fork that just refuses to loosen its grip on the mountain biking audience. We seem to be, like, you know, perseveringly very interested in them. So with all these trade-offs that I've mentioned, can you talk a bit about what an upside down fork could do that a regular fork couldn't, and maybe even touch upon what Push are trying to achieve with this new model?
Yeah, I mean, upside down forks are interesting because they do just kind of keep popping up and then disappearing and popping up and disappearing. And I don't feel like anyone's quite cracked the code yet, but you know, the concept is that you should have, and in the way the weight is balanced of the fork, so you have more of the weight above rather than below. And actually the amount where the lubrication sits, like the bushings and seals are always lubricated rather than having, you know, picture your normal right side up fork, all the lubricating oil technically wants to go to the bottom. So by flipping it upside down, should be smooth and easy to use. I mean, like, and the stiffness is one of those things that gets talked a lot about, but the companies that are making upside down forks do claim that kind of helps it track better by not being so so exceptionally stiff. You know, there are, you do need to find a balance, because if it feels too twisty, then it's not going to be a good ride experience. But if there's a little bit of compliance, to use the buzzword, that could be a benefit as well. And this is coil sprung, so that's also, people love coil springs everywhere.
With the pneumatic bottom out as well, I mean, there's a lot of tech going on here. I think the thing with the compliance is very interesting, because when we talk about compliance, it often sort of alludes to the idea that we mountain bike at a set frequency of bumps and everything's very consistent and you can just tune the compliance for that. But obviously there are some instances which are very, very high twisting forces or impacts, and some that are not. So it's one size solution that fits all, but really compliance is such a massive and complicated issue. I mean, I think it looks pretty good. I think they made a good knock of it. I think there'll be people that love it, and good for them.
Yeah, some people just want something that looks different, and I think that's kind of where they end up. I mean, there's going to be that crowd too that wants the exotic, looks different thing. And you have Intense had an upside down fork for a number of years, same kind of thing, just kind of like boutique, high end. And hopefully the performance is there. We're trying to get one in. We should hopefully have it soon-ish. And we'll test it and see
if we can get one to put on my Zeroed, the ultimate low sprung bike.
Oh yeah,
that'd be because pretty good. That, to be honest with you, the tracking is unbelievable. And it's a similar sort of idea. The gearbox keeps on persevering, and then maybe hasn't been taken up by the market en masse. But we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Alicia, what do you think of something like an upside down fork? Would you be interested if you had a new bike and it came with an upside down fork? What would your feelings be on that? Like, what would your gut reaction be?
Yeah, if it came on a new bike of mine, I would 100% give it a chance. It's the kind of thing that I'm not sold on, but I'm totally willing to try out and just see how it does. I'm, I think, still pretty open to however it shapes up. Like, it could have some pros, some cons, but that's kind of everything ever that we put on our bikes. And the compliance question is really interesting, because kind of like you said, it's not one size fits all. Mountain biking is unpredictable. And so then we need things that can respond to unpredictability. Sometimes with compliance, like, that we do want our forks to actually soak up the unpredictable things we hit mountain biking. So we're just trying to figure out what's going to do the job. And we haven't found a perfect solution yet, but we keep inching kind of closer to perfection. Like, I think bikes today are really, really, really good. And so if anyone can kind of figure out those marginal gains, I'm all for it.
Sarah, probably close to maybe even 10 years ago now, something around that, we saw the RS1 from RockShox in cross country. Again, upside down fork, had some funky torque caps that just didn't necessarily make swapping between components the easiest thing in the world. Did you ever get a try on that fork? And what did you think?
I've never tried it. I feel like the weirdest fork I've ever ridden is just like the Cannondale Lefty. So if you're kind of looking at something that's different for the sake of being different, but I mean, it did work pretty well on that scalpel we had for the field test. So You got to be open-minded and, you know, be willing to get some weird looks on the trail and lots of questions, which it depends if you like the person who gets lots of questions when you're out on the trail, if you would rather just, you know, stealthily go about your business.
I guess that's one thing. I dislike being the person who gets lots of questions out on the trail. But fun fact, I am, well, my first ever proper mountain bike was pretty much, I think, the first scalpel that ever existed, with maybe the first lefty fork that ever existed. And I mean, this was more than a decade ago, so I can't say much about its performance, but it, you know, served the purpose of getting me into mountain biking, so I'll call it a win.
Making you lots of eccentric friends who were asking you all about your bike.
Oh, man.
We have to go even further, like the Shiver. I mean, none of you have probably ridden the Shiver. I mean, that was a cult classic. That's an upside-down fork, Marzocchi Shiver. I've ridden the RS1 back in the day. The damper on the RS1 was the issue with it. Like, the stiffness I didn't really have trouble with because it was a shorter travel fork, but the damper was not good. And then even that X-Fusion, that bike, the X-Fusion upside-down fork that never really came out, we kept seeing it at trade shows. I might actually have that somewhere kicking around.
I feel like but you need brands, a wall of fame.
Fox have tried. They had that prototype at MSA, maybe even 2011 or something. And then we saw KS, who's kind of off on the side doing their own thing. But the KS had that fork at Taipei last year, which is actually going on this week. We should have some content rolling out any moment now. Something else we'll have going out either this week or early next, it's coming either way, is this year's State of the Sport survey. Sarah and Alicia, would you like to talk us through what State of the Sport is and how we're doing it slightly differently this year? I don't know who wants it first.
I can go. So State of the Sport is basically in the past we've sent it out just to athletes to kind of get an idea of how much athletes are making and kind of the health, I guess, of each one of the disciplines. And so this year we sent it out to the athletes already. So we have a list of kind of, I think it's the top 20 women and top 60 men for each field. So cross country, downhill, enduro, and free ride, to kind of get an idea of how much people are making so that they can kind of because we don't have any of those numbers published and people are kind of quite cautious about sharing those numbers in the bike industry. And so it kind of gives athletes a way to know their value when they're speaking to sponsors, basically. And so hopefully this can kind of help elevate mountain biking as a whole. And so this year we sent it out to the athletes already. So we've kind of started to see the results trickle in from that. And so if there's any athletes listening to this, please send that through to us. But this year, for the first time, we have a survey that will be going out just on the Pink Bike homepage to the Pink Bike community. And so you can fill out a form for the first time about the state of the sport and just to get an idea of people's viewing habits, kind of what you think athletes are making, kind of the things that are more interesting to viewers and not. And so that'll be kind of another part of the puzzle to see where the health of the industry is and what people are interested in as well.
I think one of the really interesting sides of it is it gives athletes a chance to kind of voice their concerns about where the race world is going and what they see as the biggest problems in the sport. And I'm really curious to see that, how that compares to what viewers see as the problems in the sport, and kind of just a comparison, because there could be really big discrepancies between what athletes think of their competition versus what the viewers see as the problems they're facing. And it'll be cool just to figure out what problems the bike world needs to solve.
I wonder if, because sometimes I think that, how to put this, I think actually the Pink Bike comment section, don't get me wrong, it can be a live wire place, but actually a lot of time I think a lot of their views are quite representative. Mm-hmm. I'd be interested to see how that tracks. Like, I know that there's a lot of sarcasm and XYZ, but there's also actually a lot of kind of very astute observation a lot of the time, especially when it comes to, you know, many of them know far more than me about how business works. And I've noticed, like, you know, if everyone wants to understand how something works and these big financial movements that are happening in the industry, go to the comment section. There's normally someone at least purporting to know what they're doing and know what they're talking about. So that's always pretty interesting. This week we've actually got a podcast that was recorded with Kaz, Dario, Christina and myself, where we talk about what makes our bike our own. So how could you hop on it and pick it out of the bunch from any other bikes that might look indeed very similar? We hope you enjoy it, and get in the comments below and let us know what is it about your bike that helps you identify it and makes it specific to you. We hope you enjoy it. Hello, and we are in Squamish with Dario, Kaz, and Christina. I've given them a load of like chocolate raisins mixed in with toffee chocolate, and
like 1 in 10 is the stickiest thing you've ever eaten.
My mouth is glued shut.
So if ever, you know, someone doesn't speak for a couple of minutes, it's because they're asphyxiating in the corner thanks to lockjaw.
We've pulled fillings out of our teeth already.
Now, we've all convened here today to talk about what makes our bike our own. So whether that's a particular setup, a particular style, maybe something like a rear tire we can't help but resist to put on our bikes, for instance, that style of thing. The idea being, if, for instance, one of us happened to ride a Transition Spire, if there was multiple in a lineup, how would I identify the fact that that one absolutely was mine? Now, Christina, you're kind of becoming a regular guest on the Pink Bike podcast. We're getting you more and more, especially now we record locally in Squamish. You've kind of come into mountain biking slightly later than some people in your 20s. You've gone into the racing thing. You've done the bike park thing. What's been your favorite sort of era of Christina? Is it Enduro Christina, Downhill Christina, or Beginner Christina when everything was just so amazing?
I love that question. Era of Christina. Oh, possibly when I first came to Whistler. Yeah, I was more beginner back then, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. I had no gear, no idea, and I just had the best time ever on some pretty wild bikes back then.
I bet. Yeah, I remember coming to mountain biking as well slightly later and had no, there was, my gratitude was so amazed. Like I hadn't worn off at all for how good bikes were, even the entry level ones. Dario, sometimes when we do things like we do the roast each other's bikes videos, etc., it feels that you and I, in some ways, we really, really agree on what setup looks like. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, it feels we differ. Would you say that's fair to say?
Yeah, I think we're like, I mean, the three of us are like generally close. Mm.
But the three guys, not me.
Yeah. Well, your bikes would be too small for me as a starting point. But I think the suspension setup is different for us. But, you know, bike's a bike.
Yeah, it's of course very subjective.
I think... Are we jumping right into what makes our bikes?
I was going to do a bit more flirting with the idea, and then we're going to get into
it. Yeah, we'll circle the pole just a little bit more.
Kaz, do you think that bikes have been easier to make your own over the last 10 years? You know, coming into it now, you can actually get a really specific setup for you, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're coming out of the box. They don't need as much customization. You know, even back 10 years ago, they'd all still come with super long stems, really short, narrow bars. So that's changed. So yeah, I think your baseline starting point's a lot better.
Do you guys miss that?
No. It was so annoying.
I kind of do.
What? You miss the wrong setup?
There's a feeling of elitism in being like, I've come to the right setup and you're still on the right setup. To
Kaz and I have a track record of never having anything to do with elitism, Dario. So, you're speaking to me.
We're here for the people.
Yeah. I don't even know what that word means. Yeah. So let's talk about that then. Let's talk about making a bike your own. I mean, I think it still happens to a degree. Like droppers still are just never long enough. It feels like that's the recurring theme. But apart from that, they're pretty good. Kaz, you are getting a brand new bicycle. It's your dream bike. I don't know what it'll be off the shelf nowadays. Compared to what most product managers spec on a bike, compared to what you want, is there anything that stands out that you're constantly itching to change?
I'd say brakes sometimes for more like lighter duty trail bikes or even like down country-ish bikes. You know, I like stronger brakes than typically come. Like we were talking about SRAM, it came with SRAM level brakes or G2s. I would want code brakes on there. So I think I'd like a more powerful brake than typically gets spec'd. And then otherwise, I mean, I do kind of prefer a 40 mil stem on most bikes, maybe a 50 mil if it's an XC bike, but even then 50 mil is quite short for an XC bike. So I do like a little shorter stem. And then handlebar width is pretty standard, I'd say. So not a ton of huge needs as far as customization goes, but I'm with you. Longer travel dropper post is nice. Like I like a 200 on pretty much all bikes, again, except for XC bikes. I don't think you need it on an XC bike, but even then I like a 150 drop on a, you know, purebred XC bike. 150 is nice. And then that is more than most people probably want.
I suppose you mentioned a word there, downcountry, which was all about bastardizing XC bikes. Mm-hmm. It became sun. It felt like it had its heyday, but that day in the sun was quite short.
Yeah.
There was a moment where it was like down country this, down country that. I don't know if Levy was leafleting at night.
Yeah, little drones just dropping over towns. Yeah, I don't think that term, I mean, it's funny and it's
I feel like
funny.
We still see it.
Yeah.
I definitely still see it. It's like I was lingering in the YouTube comments lately.
Yeah, it's a description, but I think that there's kind of two, now you have trail bikes. You can have like a light trail bike, which is a better description. And then like you could have a pure XC bike, but you can do some modifications. Like even right now, I'm testing a pure XC bike that's coming out in the future. And it came with a longer stem and 740 bars. And I did put a shorter stem and wider bars, but nothing. I put 760 bars on. So it's still shorter than I run on an enduro bike. But again, in the grand scheme of things, it's longer. I don't know. It's like just for, it's fit for me.
Sorry to go, you know, too far down this, but when we do test bikes, how much should we be trying to stick to the original spec?
Yeah.
Because are we reviewing the sort of the total concept or the frame? Yeah.
You have to resist the urge to just...
To make it good sometimes.
Exactly. You have to, and I mean, I force myself.
I lean in.
Yeah, but you kind of can't.
I have to
have a talk with Dario after this. But no, like we do initially when the bikes show up, ride them in their stock form at least a few times to get a baseline. Because you have to know what it's like. You can't just take everything off a bike, put your favorite parts on and be like, it's a great bike. And like, well, the general consumer doesn't have a stock
coming out?
Of.
Yeah. What's that? When is this pod coming out?
Honestly,
in the future.
Okay, this is the score with how the podcast is going. I'm comfortable with the fact that I'm a personality hire. You know, I'm comfortable with the fact that I'm like, I'm not really expected to do much work and I just plod about the place and, you know, just talk by the coffee machine.
Bring
I know
chocolate
that,
candies in from time to time.
That's what's happened today. Like, I know that's what I bring. And people have recently been expecting me to do my job and it just ain't right. Mm. So we're kind of backlogged in some ways. So God knows when it's going to come out. I'll do my best, but probably a couple of weeks.
Okay. Well, just to be safe, a bicycle that I'm testing came with parts that I didn't love, but not like unrideable stuff, just things that I'd prefer not to use. And I changed them eventually. I rode it with those parts for a bit. And then I was like, well, I want to ride this bike more and I'll ride it more if it has better brakes and tires that I like. And that's what I changed.
Is there kind of a limit as to how much you would invest in a bike once you've already... you know, bit the bullet and spent that couple $1,000s?
Great question.
Yeah. My bike purchasing history is very much one of like everything is used. And
except
I usually
when they're for free from pink bikes, you win a competition.
Right. I'm trying to keep that history silent.
Put a link in the description.
Yeah. Damn it.
Dario's origin story.
That changed my life. I mean, maybe one day I'll do a podcast on just that.
Yeah.
Because there are very few Rubicons in life where you're like, that event changed the trajectory of my existence, but that is one of them.
Can we not talk about it now?
It's the whole thing.
I've got time.
I'll finish my point, I tend to like start with a frame and build up from there. So like, I rarely think of it like a complete bike change, but I do think there's a point where it's like, you're wasting money if you've purchased a complete bike and you're swapping every part.
There's SRAM AXS dropper has entered the chat, you know, because they're expensive and we tend to swap them. Christina, we obviously, you know, Dario probably rides extra large typically. Carrot, you're a large, would you say?
Yeah, I'm a large.
What size bike do you normally ride? And do you think that has any complications when it comes to making it fit for you from stock parts?
For sure. I mean, for the most part, I ride a small bike across the board. Some brands I might dip up into a medium, say like the Santa Cruz V10. I tend to go up into a medium on the downhill bike. But yeah, it's hard. I mean, like Kaz said earlier, rarely do bikes come with the appropriate, in my opinion, appropriate length of dropper post. I'm usually, you know, sometimes I get stuck with like a 125 that has come on the bike and you need to upgrade it, and sometimes maybe even go wireless if the frame does not allow you to have a long insert.
I imagine with a small bike, there's a lot more complication around that seat tube junction.
Mm. Definitely. Yeah. Between water bottles and...
Yeah. Small bikes never fit water bottles.
Yeah.
Like
tell
I've
me
seen
about
so
it.
Many times you have to run the stubbiest little bottle. Yeah. You have these small riders out there just riding around dehydrated.
That's why I'm obsessed with water filtration devices. We will link to that below.
Nolly have come up with an ingenious solution to get around this. I'm testing their Chilcotin at the moment. And what they've done is they made me, who typically rides a large, ride a medium.
Then
the small suddenly can fit everything.
Yeah.
Because it's got like 480 reach.
Yeah, it's a really good idea.
Magic.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think having, I like to have a set of handlebars grips, stem, and dropper that I kind of take between bikes.
Oh yeah,
not
I do
for
that.
Test bikes necessarily. I do try and make stuff work, but if it was my own bike, I tend to run that sort of thing.
Mm. I think there's value in like having a control cockpit for test bikes, though.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, especially when especially when you're talking about really, finding that very fine difference between frames or between setups. Do you want to save your origin story for another time?
We'll do it. I still haven't done a getting to know thing, so we'll save it.
Oh, this,
yeah.
Oh,
this is a little cool.
It's all coming together.
Yeah. Down there.
Wow,
yeah.
They're going to keep them coming back for more.
They're building the anticipation.
Get to know
with
me at a later date.
Just pushing their patience to breaking point. So let's get into it. What makes our bikes our own? As we're going kind of in the circle as we're sat here, let's start with you, Kaz. What do you think is a real signifier that this bike belongs to Michael Kazima of Bellingham?
Now I get them all custom stickers and I just put them on every single bike and all my components.
Yeah, he's got that American flag Mike Kazima sticker on every bike.
No, I definitely don't do that. My bikes are actually pretty normal. Like I don't have one standout feature. My saddles are pretty normal angle, all my things. But I think if you hopped on, a lot of times I do feel that my brake levers are uneven. They feel even to me, but I think one pulls in more than the other if I was going to measure that distance. That's just because that's how it feels for my hands. My hands, I don't know, maybe they're not the same size or something.
I do something the same in that I actually hold my front brake in a different part of my finger.
Mm. Mm.
So they feel the same, but the lever, they start, the throw is different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think my throw is different on them, but they are, I do measure them, like when I mount them up, they're in the same spot and same angle, but they just, if someone grabbed them, because I used to work at a shop and I would get scolded by my boss, she would just come and be like, these are uneven. I'm like, no, they're totally even. She's like, no, they're not. And it was like a huge battle. But I think maybe both of us had uneven hands. It feels.
It's
like,
all relative.
Yeah, like calibrated oppositely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, I'm trying, but it was a thing. But so that part, I mean, that's the little tiny thing. But otherwise, I don't think there's one. I mean, yeah, it's all kind of normal-ish, like tires that work well for where I live.
You tend to have noticed, we spoke about it recently in a video, you'd be tempted to might go for a cut spike on the front.
Just in the winter. That's like a winter. And like cut spike, we're just talking about the Max is short.
Oh, so yeah, I caught like an old
yeah,
old
someone was like, what's that? Yeah, but anyway, when it's really nasty out, the shorty, but usually like where I live in Bellingham, I can run if I'm running Maxis, it's an Assegai front DHR2. That'd be my preferred tire combo. I do like the Max grip compound, at least for the front tire, because we do have some slimy bits. But like maybe a little bit more aggressive tires than might come on, say, a trail bike, just again, because of the trails I like to ride.
And how do you feel about like trail casing, downhill casing? Do you opt for heavier? Because it feels like there still seems to be an occurrence that happens with specking trail bikes where they come with exo tires. And to be honest with you, depending where you ride, sometimes they're absolutely great.
Yeah.
They're inappropriate for all things, but I do think that.
Yeah, I'm not someone that's like dead set on all my bikes. I'm such a hardcore rider. I need downhill casing because I rip them off. I'm not that rider. So I can definitely run an exo plus exo casing. I mean, even on XC bikes, you can, even like the BC bike race this year went on a pretty technical trails. I just ran XC tires as you would, and I didn't get any flats, no punctures, no nothing.
XO or XO plus?
Just XO.
XO minus even. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes they're like the...
Yeah, like lately I've been riding a bike with Aspen Race in the rear, which is an exciting winter tire if you haven't tried it.
Yeah, it's essentially a road tire.
Yeah, but it's pretty fun. And yeah, so I found that I don't get a lot of flats, especially where we live, because in Bellingham it's a little bit more roots and less sharp pointy rocks. So it really depends on where you go. So if I'm specking my own bike, I tend to go stickier and a little bit kind of burlier tires, but I know that I can get away with something lighter and it's not going to be the end of the world.
Dario,
Hello, Henry. Talk
about your bike.
Everyone's going to talk about the saddle, so I'll just broach that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I got my nose down. Yeah. Basically, my rule of thumb, which I think is a good starting point, is I angle the...
It's the nib of the saddle to the front axle, right?
It's nose of the saddle to the center of the bars.
Mm.
Because I'm tall, and I usually ride a slightly small for me frame.
Yeah.
That's like, it looks quite down. My logic, as I've explained numerous times, I think, is if we climb up hills and the bike sags, it becomes quite flat in those scenarios. I do know that my saddle angle is extreme, but I've made my bed and I'm really comfy.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I mean, you're the one that rides the bike, right?
Yeah.
Is there any other quirks that you might?
A lot of stripped anodization.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. You're more. Yeah,
I'm getting better. I will say. I mean, I had an engineer at a prominent company tell me I was going to kill myself.
And, what, from the fumes?
No, because he saw a stem that I had stripped the anode off of, and he was like, "This is upsetting." And
I think he was half kidding,
but I'm like, well, you know, he's got a point, and so I've toned it back a little bit, but. Anything non-critical gets the anodization stripped off of it.
So, Derek, can you help me understand it? Because you're someone that gets some really, really nice bike parts. What is the compulsion just to make them all silver?
I mean, I don't do it with, like, test parts.
It's part raccoon. Shiny.
It's like stuff that I've had for a long time, and I, like, want to make it look shiny.
Oh, so it's actually making it look... It's like rejuvenating.
I'm not under the impression it looks better. It caters to my aesthetic more.
Rat rod dystopian.
Yeah. I do like the simplicity of like a bike with all silver parts. Mm. Like I am not a fan of like
color splash and bright yellows.
Yeah. I like a bright paint job, but I also like the components to look clean. Mm. I don't know why.
But then you get a doodling on your own.
Yeah, my helmets always are covered in shit as well. I don't know, man. I can't leave anything alone. I think that's answer.
You might have the most unique bikes out of all of us, I think.
Yeah. I'll take it. Yeah. I think that is probably the telltale. I also do run like hillbilly on any bike that goes downhill most of the year. Just because it's a tire I know well.
Yes. And in terms of like cockpit or dimension changes, anything that you gravitate towards?
I run...
As Kaz mentioned, 40mm stem is pretty much as...
Yeah, I like 40 to 50 anywhere in there for trail bikes. I run my brakes really far in because I have long fingers and wide hands. And so I think like that's the thing I have to move on anyone else's bike is like brakes have to go in.
Do you think that, you know, we've seen the relationship between sort of weight distribution and stem length change massively over the last couple of years? Do you think that there'll ever be a new wave, maybe offsets get shorter again? Something like that,
it.
And we can go to, you know, a different, whether that's some kind of raised stem, like Woolsman's doing, like BNB's doing, or maybe something shorter than our stock 40, 50 mil.
Yeah, I'd love to try it. I mean, I like had a period where I was running the like 31 mil stem and bars with like 16 degree sweep, thinking that was correct. I've since reformed, but it's interesting. It's different.
What did that give you, do you think?
Your like hands are directly in line with the steering axis of the head tube. And so you kind of, it's very twitchy feeling, but on a long bike with a pretty slack head angle, it can be nice. It wasn't for me overall. I think like I'm riding better with a normal stem and like pretty straight bars.
Possibly made a bike that was too small for you, even smaller?
Too big. I was riding like a long bike at the time. I don't know. I was like playing around with stuff, but it would be cool to see like
phase.
What yeah it's experimental phase it'd be cool crazy. To see like what happens with that, because I think like we haven't fully played that experimentation out.
I think we're just waiting for the next big, I think things are settling and there'll be one change that kicks things off again. I had some of those. It's actually quite embarrassing, but it's a pretty funny story. So I'm testing some of those Matics and had them set at 130 and had a 150 fork on a bike and basically had an issue with it. I was running to meet my friends for riding.
Oh, you put the 130.
So I got the 130 fork, rebuilt it, took the travel spaces out, put it to 150, threw it all together in a rush. And because it has a reverse arch, I put it on that made normal. But actually, and I was like running like, oh no, what am I going to do?
Yeah, you're like wheels flopping everywhere.
Oh no, it was all the opposite. It was because it was basically like zero offset, maybe even minus offset. And I was riding... I'll tell you the trail afterwards. It was a pretty technical, proper trail.
Yeah.
And the tracking was fucking unbelievable.
How's your brake the right way?
The braking, because the lowers were the right way, the crowns were the wrong way.
Yeah.
And I just had to run it. I was like, I'll make it through. I had so much weight on the front wheel, the braking down slabs was like nothing else.
Your trail number would have been so different.
Yeah, but like it made like, on like tight stuff, you're getting spat out a lot.
Yeah.
But my God, when in its right place, it was amazing.
Huh.
Yeah, so if you want me to set up your forks, Darren,
I mean, it'd be cool to try. Honestly, I know that like some of the people involved in like pushing short offset tried that, like flipping forks around when they could and experimenting a bit. And, you know, in like the randonneur world, which is a completely different thing, but like long trail, short trail is like a big discussion, and like how static geometry bikes ride, and that's like less relevant to us because everything squishes, but like, you know, there's conversation out there. So
honestly, it's worth expecting, because Mojo used to do those those multiple position offset crowns, and we tried them reversed, and just a lot of weight on the front.
Christina,
onto your bikes. So what makes a Christina Schippetta bike? So you get one from the shop. What are you changing? What are you tweaking? What are you looking to do?
I do find, like Kaz kind of said earlier, one of the things I want right off the bat is really powerful brakes. Like, give me all the pistons, give me the big rotors. I do not have time for 160 mil rotors, maybe on my pump track bike, but that's pretty much it. Otherwise, they just get glazed over so quickly. You go down one sketchy section and then that's it. So powerful brakes for sure. I can always tell when my brake levers are in the wrong position, or if I hop on somebody else's bikes and it doesn't feel comfortable, or the bite point's not there. Like, that just gets into my head. It, like, you don't trust what's about to come for you. So I'd say that's pretty particular to me. And then, yeah, good tires, yeah, for sure.
Do you prefer like something kind of like an aggressive tread? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, I like aggressive tread, front and rear. I have ridden some semi-slick tires in the back. I prefer not to do that.
Yeah, they were about for a while, hey, and we kind of, as a community, were like, hey, maybe not.
Like, I was really into semi-slicks. Cornering, but no.
They're good, but they're just like pre-worn out. You might as well wear out your other tires until they turn semi-slick.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I think there's something to be said for a downhill tire, hear me out, that's been used quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. Like a day. And,
yeah, well, maybe...
one day ridden in.
I think that, yeah, once they get ridden for, say, a couple of weeks, they lose a lot of the stiffness in the carcass, and you actually get, like, something that is actually really nice. It's really, like, it feels like it offers really good grip.
It's pliable, but it also is supportive. You're not worried. I hate flat tires. Like, I can't stand it. So I am often... not over biked, but maybe over tired. You know, I'm gonna run the double down.
Inserts?
I have not.
No, I suppose I think you know, probably being a smaller rider, you don't hang off the bike so much in terms of just.
People do think it's crazy that I run like 20 or less PSI,
that's
but
what
I mean,
too, that's what I run.
Well, there you go. We're basically the same size. Yeah. Same size, same weight. Yeah. Do you run tire inserts?
No.
But do you run tire inserts? I don't want tire inserts because a lot of time I'm testing wheels and I need to know if they're going to break. I feel like it's cheating if I put inserts in there.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I've tried them in the past. I don't need them. If I'm not flatting or not having issues with tires now, like I would, if I was having tons of flat issues or puncture issues, I would just bump up to a downhill casing tire on all my bikes, but I don't have that issue either. But yeah, I usually run like 20 front, 23 rear.
I think some people run inserts not for flats though, but like to optimize the system.
Yeah, and there's like, lots of like, I mean, it's fine. If it, whatever
there's
works,
an argument for it. I used to run inserts all the time and now I don't have any bikes with inserts, but I'm returning to the insert world
out of curiosity yet again.
Yeah, I'm getting insert curious.
I'm not.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it's my job.
That's a different role.
It's just a pinky.
Experimental thing. Yeah.
Check out my Reddit. tire insert, insert curious. I'm thinking again. I like riding tire inserts. Pretty much, especially in the wet, really low pressures, having that kind of like slow rebound. I think it's, and soft pressure, I think is really, really great. My bike, I worry, is, I thought everyone's going to have loads of really horrible things they do to bikes. But you guys, everyone seems so...
I mean, you can argue that the things I do to bikes are horrible.
Actually, to be fair, and yours are irreversibly horrible.
Yeah.
Well, you can... you could re-anodize parts.
Yeah.
Someone could.
Brian
someone
has to anodize
it. Yeah, Brian's probably do that for us.
Yeah, anodizing things.
He did tell me he won't do aluminum. He's only doing titanium right now.
Oh, it's cleaner.
That is such a Brian.
His standards, only titanium.
Yeah.
So my bikes.
I mean, your brakes are backwards.
I have my brakes backwards. Yeah, that's true. I'm similar to you. I only ever eyeball my brakes because I don't want to get too fixated on it. I think I have the front one biting slightly closer.
Me too.
I run my suspension very soft, my rebound fully open, my high speed always fully closed, and then I just tune low speed in to go from there, which gives what I think we can all agree is an amazing performing bike.
It's something.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Wait till you see this video of Matt Beer. I've got
Really? Of him with your setup?
Yeah. I've been converting people to Squamish one at a time. Yeah, he went, I mean, it'll be out by then. He went 2 seconds faster.
Hmm.
I run a 50-second track.
What did he ride
just
first?
Just based on your suspension recommendation.
Just on the telemetry.
Yeah. He did his setup and then yours.
Then Fox base, and then mine.
How many laps did he do?
So yours was on the third lap of the track.
Oh, no, he knows. This is the track we always test on.
All right.
It's like, yeah, it's our bread and butter. So
shoot.
Yeah, way faster. 2 seconds over 50. He should get him a jersey. Get him to the World Cups. He's going right to the top.
He's going racing soon. Next week, he's going to New Zealand, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's going to
use your setup.
Freaking
fuck
A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He should probably not.
I should do some testing.
I will say, was it on his IBIS?
Yeah.
Oh, because I hopped on that today for some fun. No. I just noticed that the fork was way softer than he usually runs it. Yeah. And I was like, I wonder if someone else rode this bike.
We took 20 PSI out.
Yeah, what? That checks out.
Fork?
Yeah.
That is a lot.
Yeah, so I think we'll do a podcast on it anyway because...
Interesting.
I don't know if Matt, because I was so excited, I think I was more excited than him, and I don't know if he was trying to protect my feelings by saying he liked it. Maybe he'll change it in time, but I think there is something to it. You have to ride a bike differently, but it is really good.
I think if I could tune from your setup a little closer to mine, I'd like it.
Well, why don't we put the telemetry kit on and make a day of it?
I'll give it a shot.
It'll be so nice.
I'm not opposed. I mean, I would literally try anything. It's my job.
He's tried some weird stuff.
It'd be like the father-son bonding time.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know? It'd be so nice. I'd love to. It'd be a pleasure. We can go play catch afterwards. I'll ruffle your hair. Call you a sport.
You could film this all in sepia tone. I could just be soft music playing. You could run to each other in the field.
You can see me going over the bars in slow motion. Because the fork's bottoming out on every...
You're next one's going to double cast.
Yeah.
You're in Friday Fails next week.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
That's one thing. I always, pretty much always run 26 PSI front and rear.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just change...
Is that regardless of casing?
Yes.
What the hell?
Because I think, hear me out, right? You run similar sags on bikes, and then you add different levels of compression depending on stroke. For me, I want to run similar sort of sag, and then I just go to more compression through a thicker casing.
It hurts my brain sometimes trying to figure out the setup, Henry.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And it's always got to be 26 front and back.
But it's not compression in the way that suspension is. It's not
totally dissimilar.
It's pretty dissimilar. There's no fluids that are controlling it. There's no circuitry moving those fluids at different rates.
It's just a resistance to... you could have friction damping and it could work theoretically similar to hydraulic damping. This is just tire damping.
I can see it, yeah.
Come to me, son.
You don't like a little softer front because of where your weight is on the bike? Lower pressure in the front?
I don't even mind the matching pressures. It's just to me that if I'm running
a
downhill
thing.
Tire, I'm going to run it at a lower pressure than an XO casing.
If you're riding slower speeds, but say in the depth of winter, I might. But even right now, I would just, I just hit the rim all the time. So, and I burp and I don't, especially I burp a lot in turns.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fucking hack, basically.
That's the scariest thing, burping in turns, ripping a tire off. That's why I don't mess around. Downhill.
Yeah.
You guys are just all hardcore. Yeah.
They're way more hardcore than
I just putz around. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say I only struggle with the tire pressure thing on XC tires because I want to run lower pressures because I know that's correct for that kind of bike because you get better climbing. It's more comfortable, better traction. But modern XC bikes are capable enough that I could easily tear a tire off a rim in the right corner.
Factor review and people fair enough who know, who ride lots of XC. I was going 28 PSI sometimes, which is too much. But at the same time, I was hitting the rim all the time, so I didn't know what to do. I broke the rim, but I had the right pressure.
Yeah,
you know. But I would like to go lower. I think it's I think maybe the XC I was doing around here was it was stuff you would find on a. Convinced it was stuff you find on a World Cup course, but maybe it's the hardest bit of a World Cup course all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That is wild what all those riders ride on the World Cup course bikes,
with
let
those
alone.
Stems that are below the head tube.
Yeah.
There's seat up there.
Absolutely wild.
It's cool.
Respect.
I'm into what cross country is turning into. The courses are getting good. The bikes are good now.
Crazy shit too.
Pretty fun.
Yeah. Mm.
Pretty rowdy.
Do you think that? I know. I think more people could do with giving cross country another chance.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot because I've been riding some e-bikes and then going. I've done some back and forth days on an e-bike one day, then a full on XC bike the next day. And I think more people should buy XC bikes instead of e-bikes. It's the same phenomenon. If you've been pedaling some heavy 38-pound enduro bike around for the last 5 years. If you just go and get a full-on XC bike that weighs 24 pounds, you're going to feel like someone strapped a motor to it. Mm. It's amazing. It's so fast and
so
easy.
Fun, so
and there's
nimble.
No battery to die and no electronics to mess around.
You just got to upgrade those brakes.
Yeah. I can have one for a ride.
Yeah, exactly.
On our,
like
on
put some good brakes and some wider bars on an XC bike. Maybe you call it downcountry, but just call it bike that fits you and can stop. Yeah, like it's better than an e-bike.
But it's kind of terrifying to descend though sometimes.
No.
They're pretty good these days.
Pretty good.
They have like 66 degree head angles.
Different World Cup XC bikes. And we went for a ride and hit like the big jump line in town and like... They're incredible.
They
genuinely incredible. Like I'm afraid
approved,
it's gonna like shatter underneath me sometimes. But it's
gonna say
it works.
With that European standard. Like this is only a grade 3 bike. And this is a grade 4 trail.
Maybe don't do exactly that. But for most people, I think it's great to like.
We're not condoning anything.
No, but it's also real fun. So like, go mess around on XC bikes these days because they're great.
Bought one of those tempos.
Yeah, that thing. That's like a good. That's a trail bike, I would say, but it's super fun. Like
I've underforked it.
Yeah,
and. It's fast and I put horrible tires on and it's great.
Yeah. Because you're probably at like what an XC bike is. Like, do you know what your head angle sits at now?
I don't. I haven't measured it. I want to do a video, which we'll do a video coming up soon.
Yeah. So it's 130 travel now?
130 travel.
Yeah. So you're almost to like modern XC bikes are 120, 120.
Yeah, it's 130,
I bet you're pretty similar to the Geo. Yeah. You can do some stuff.
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really great. Do you, living up in Whistler, it's funny because I think most people, like Whistler is such a mecca of mountain biking. Does it have much of a cross country scene?
It does. Yeah. I do my best to like pick out some really good navy blue laps, even into like the single
blue.
Black
navy
diamond blue. Stuff. Yeah. It's got some really good laps. One of the long format, I guess, cross country marathon type esque races they do, the back 40. That one's pretty rad. It goes from one end of Whistler to the other. A lot of people race it on their cross country bikes and it hits a good variety of like blue to single black trails.
I've heard that's quite, I don't know, I've heard it's quite technical, some of that stuff.
I mean, it can be.
Yeah, that's a technical. For XC, that's a techie course.
For sure.
Yeah,
would you want like Minion sort of tires on? Or do you think
Matt
you
raced it last year and he ran a DHR in the front.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Matt did pretty well on it last year too, I think. Mm-hmm. People were not surprised, but surprised.
I think he did really well, but I think even, he told me it's basically he was amazed at, is it Jeff Kabush?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That like how good, I mean, Matt obviously is a really amazing rider and got a really good result. He was like, the amount of time that he put into Matt was like, respect.
Kabush, after all these years, he's still
probably racing on
I mean, he was racing
too.
Those uphills, Kabush. Like,
it's an XC race, you got to.
And that's where you make most of the time on that course. I did it the first year that they ran it, and I was on my 34-pound enduro bike, proper tires, because we were going down like, some spicier trails that first year. They had toned it down a little bit, but you know, it run what you brung, and I had a great day out. I won the downhill timed section, so that's
sick.
All I cared about.
I think under tired is a good sport too. Like there's overbiked and like over tires and stuff, but
under-tired,
I think under-tired,
Mike Kazima.
Yeah,
now there's a podcast.
We all just run like the Aspen semi slicks or whatever and go see what happens, because it makes you like, you have to focus and be on your toes. It's like taking the bumpers away. Like you just can't. It's hard because there's your margin of error gets so slim that when it goes away, you're just on the ground and you're kind of like thinking how dumb you are that you decided to corner that hard with no tread, but it's pretty fun too.
Well, I think under tired really goes hand in hand with good brakes. Like if you can modulate your brakes better, then you're not worried about sliding and skidding out on a rock roller in a corner.
But the other
good
brakes, I know brakes you can go overcome the, like you almost want less braking when you have no tread. Because otherwise you skid everywhere because you're just so strong, you're stopping the bike.
Well, you
got
to learn how to modulate a bit better. Don't get to that point.
But you don't need to modulate if they don't actually stop you. And that's what you just need.
Yeah.
Like
it's like ABS, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
just grab
controlled
like,
slowing, yeah.
But I do think, so everyone listening, you should all try some XC bikes this year and scary fast tires.
I think you should wear, I know you don't agree with this because I have seen you in your Fox downcountry swimming shorts in the, but I think knee pads, just slender knee pads on XC.
No knee pads. Cause you have to be,
If you hit the ground from the same height.
No, it's the same, but you have to be,
usually worse cause there's gravel.
The terror is critical to cross country.
It's important. You need the fear because it makes you
focus. I genuinely
believe
this.
Like you have to focus more because you know your knees are naked. Dude, I'm a knee pad person 99.9% all the time. Like pretty much every ride. because I do crash.
There's something to be said about it.
No, you need to go like nothing because it's a different.
I have the slenderest knee pads. Guys. No, like, you're going to be blown away.
No,
these are so slender. What's that?
Do they do anything? Do they help? Is it worth it?
You don't
it?
Have to grow your skin back. That's the worst part. Skin back,
yeah. I wear, you so what I do though. Is when I ride the XC bike, I wear these like thin, elegant pants that I have.
That doesn't count either.
More expensive than knee pads though, let's be honest.
Hold on, yeah. These like...
No, there's like trail pants. Okay. I ride elegant. In shorts
thin,
pretty much exclusively.
Pants. Says, like, you know, part of like a two-piece suit or something, you know?
These pinstriped. Like, they're like the YT trail pants.
Oh,
I like them. They fit tight.
With elegant. The Lawrence of Arabia scarf thing coming
no,
out
no,
the
no,
back.
No. Those are the gravity pants.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
The scarf pants are preferred for downhill type things, but no, the
Friday nights.
Just like light pants. And that way, if I do, you know, crash while I'm sprinting, then there's still some skin.
Mm. Honestly, these Wafferthin knee pads, Kaz.
Oh, I believe you, but I like Wafferthin. Like, there's the element Wafferthin. Of except Wafferthin. Like riding the edge and the margin of like XC danger.
I mean,
they didn't have knee pads.
Off.
Yeah, we'll take
go for it.
At Dark
Works
Fest.
For BMX, guys.
At Dark Fest, yeah. At Dark Fest recently, Shimon Godziak was riding with no knee pads because he had a knee injury and he's coming back from a broken wrist.
Oh,
and he said, he's like, no knee pads. I'm not crashing. There's no crashing.
Yeah. Also, Dark Fest, no crashing.
Like,
yeah, don't crash
like,
at Dark
it,
Fest.
I don't think it
if
goes
you crash,
well.
No.
Yeah.
No,
like,
it's not
those
a good track
level
record.
Of crashes aren't like knee pad crashes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no crashing at Darkfest because Remy Morton doesn't run knee pads. Mm-mm. And I believe that's his reasoning. Like,
yeah.
I don't intend on crashing, but that seems like, well, don't get, I don't know, car insurance then or whatever, you know. Like,
yeah. Don't wear a helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not, you don't need knee pads for XC.
So do you not wear the 661 pressure suit either?
No.
What?
For XC? No.
What do you do for your elbows, triceps, biceps, shoulders,
just
back,
running
chest?
Free. Running free through the woods. My seat to the sky and just pedaling.
Mm. Okay, I haven't even got through my weird stuff yet.
Oh yeah, keep going. Your list is long.
I point my cleat towards my toe.
Oh, me
my
too.
Big toe. There we go.
Yeah.
My man.
Or no, I point it towards my pinky toe. Sorry.
Your pinky toe?
Yeah.
You're just locked in.
Not that far out, but like.
You're never getting out.
Then don't your heels rub? Like you're duck-footed?
No, I do it so I'm like toed in. I
yeah,
like
so everyone, I run, for those that
oh,
listen
yeah,
at home,
yeah.
We're all looking at our feet.
Yeah. Yeah, I run them so that like my feet are big toes ever so slightly in.
Mm. Wouldn't that be pointing towards your?
No, because the cleat goes like this.
Oh yeah,
to accommodate.
Sorry, this is not much of an order.
Looking at our toes and picturing cleats.
Mm.
Yeah. So Henry, you're running yours so that your feet are duck footed.
Well, basically, I think there's enough fleet float in the shoe that you don't really notice it, but it means that you just get instant out.
Okay, yeah.
Because I'm a flat pedal guy at heart. Like,
right.
I'm relatively new to the clip world. Then wind all my pins in on my pedals.
Yeah.
Is that what you do as well?
Yeah, I do.
You bought my Crank Brothers, right?
Yeah, I don't know why you'd want the pins.
No, they don't. They just mess up. They're like, it's like an uncontrolled.
They're unpredictable and weird. Yeah.
No, I'm the same way. If I run Crank Brothers, I put them all the way. I just take them out. It's
Weight savings.
Yeah.
It's all about weight. Nice.
I guess I left them in because someone told me that if you leave them in and you smack pedal a lot, it like deforms the pedal less because there's like some stuff in there to.
Yeah.
Mm.
I run Shimano pedals. So I don't know. But when I do, I know what I do with the Crank Brothers.
Because you just run the sort of bread and butter.
Yeah, Shimano XT, they just work and they're fine and I don't have to mess with them. But like I can get along with Crank Brothers too. But
because we try and persuade you to run Crank Brothers for testing and and we've also sort of settled on bar width. Right?
We got bar width dialed with me. Yeah, I'm down to 770 because of you guys because it's just easier and I don't care. Like it's 10 mils, I can adapt. But no, I do like have the Shimano's, I just like the way they're like a little less mushy feeling for me than the Crank Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. Crank Brothers, they hurt my knees, perhaps.
Okay.
It's just like a little too much turn on the old eject mode there.
Yeah. Realistically, I like those Hope ones that I tested last year.
I haven't tried those yet.
They're great, but I just don't have a stockpile of cleats or pedals. I can't. Mm. Otherwise, I would just run them on all the bikes, but I also have like four or five pairs of XT over the years, so now I can just have them on all my bikes. And I don't have to worry about switching around.
I like the Crank Brothers, because I have to rebuild them every 2 weeks too.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I never have to rebuild mine.
Really? Mine get loose. They like start
That's
clacking.
Part of the charm, baby.
Mm. You just float, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you get vertical flow and...
That's interesting. Mine tend to be pretty
I
good.
I think like the bushing wears out in mine.
Maybe you got a Friday night job.
You do pedal a shit ton though.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's...
I have one pair of pedals.
No.
Yeah, I put them on all my different bikes. I have one pair of grips and one pair of pedals that go on every bike.
We know some people and we will get you sorted.
I know. It works. I'm quick with an 8 mil, quick with a 3 mil.
Yeah. Quick with an 8 mil.
Yeah.
I guess I'm like, you know, cowboy at high noon.
Yeah.
I would love to be able to ride US style brakes, you know, European style brakes left on the front.
Yeah, before we go too much further, I let someone that works for Pink Bike came down to Bellingham yesterday, needed to borrow a bike. I let him borrow it. This person is from the UK. And as he was leaving, in my head, I was like, I wonder if he runs his brakes backward. Oh, well, like he should notice that, or he would have mentioned it. And today I talked to him. He can just run either one. He's like, oh yeah, they're backwards. It took me a little bit, but it was fine.
Andy Breaker.
I will say, I rode with someone in Whistler.
Who was this? It was Ollie.
No,
I guess if you're just grabbing both hands, just a fistful of brakes.
He's like,
all
I can just go
once,
either way. He's like, it's a little weird sometimes on the slippery woodwork. I was like, I would have swiped. Like, okay.
Wow.
I rode with someone in Whistler during Crankworks last year, and we swapped bikes so that I could try the one that he made. And we swapped the brakes on the one I was riding because I'm fussy.
Because duh.
And I was like, I don't want to die. Like, yeah. And then he was like, oh, it's all good. I'll just run him. And we rode this gnarly steep trail. And he's like, his logic was like, I can't nose pick, but everywhere else I'm just on the brakes fully. I was like, that I kind of understand, but I prefer to have them where I know they are.
See, for me, I'm scared to relearn, but also a lot of time people send test bikes in and they've gone to painstaking lengths to make the front end as tidy as possible. Mm. And I'm there straight away like, you nope.
Yeah.
Just undoing all their hard work. Okay, well, that's something to think about. Maybe I'll give another go.
Training program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to think of anything else I do that's weird. I'm pretty sure that's most of my stuff. Sometimes inserts, sometimes not.
What about crank length, I wonder?
Oh, shortest crank length possible.
Oh, your seat height too.
Nice.
Low saddle.
You do run a low seat, that's right.
Yeah, of basically I find
short legs.
Short legs, also really bad hip. So basically, if my knee comes too far into my body, so that's where the short cranks. And then if I overextend on the other way, they're not going too high.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I think that's most things kind of covered.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I think we've told about the offset. That was definitely coming up. We've alluded to Dario's Getting to Know podcast, which is going to be
just
huge.
Get ready, folks.
It is going to be probably, you know, break records, I would imagine.
Mark your calendars for the whole next 2 months. It'll
four
drop
hours,
sometime.
Dario.
God, I hope not.
And we've still got some candy to get through. So thank you very much for listening to this episode, and we will catch you next time. And we're back. Now, before we leave you, there's nothing more that I enjoy than seeing the prang of anxiety on Sarah Moore's face as I say, right, we're doing Music Corner, and then see Kaz licking his lips to shit all over the Wiggles, whatever it is Sarah's been listening to this week. I will set the tone with my Music Corner, which is Rufus Du Sol, live from Joshua Tree. It's not normally my typical bag, but I really enjoyed it. It's just a nice 45 minutes of sort of electro pop, I guess. Sarah. Without further ado, what is your Music Corner?
Okay, I definitely did not listen to 45 minutes of music this week. Never mind straight. Although I do feel like I probably sang like the wheels on the bus go round and round for that long. We have one little board book and William goes over it. He says, wee, wee, which means he wants me to sing the wheels on the bus song. But You Spin Me Round Like a Record. I didn't actually know who this was by, so I...
By Dead or Alive.
By Dead or Alive. Yeah, I like this song. Apparently two of the lead people are dead. So, I mean,
yeah,
what
Pete
kind
Burns.
Of...
So, do you want to hear something crazy?
Yeah.
In Japan, Dead or Alive were bigger than Michael Jackson, and they cancelled Michael Jackson's last night of his tour to give Dead or Alive another date because they were just like... They were just huge.
See, they're really good. I knew that, right?
good is like different to everybody, so.
Yeah, that's the problem with music. There's no like definitive good or bad, but usually my music is bad.
Yeah, well, at least you like it. It makes you happy. That's fine.
Exactly. It makes me happy when I listen to it. I mostly like songs that you can like sing the chorus, you know.
Yeah. That's Have you ever seen the Jimmy Kimmel remade the music video for shot for shot with Paul Rudd? I'm going to send you that. It's absolutely great.
Oh, nice. Because I was looking at the music video. Music videos are so creepy. I don't know how people watch music videos. I started watching this one and I was like, okay, I'm not sure I like this song anymore.
Mike, what is your Music Corner?
Mine
is it Michael Jackson?
It is not Michael Jackson. Maybe the opposite. It could be opposite of Michael Jackson. It's a band called Panopticon, and the song title is great. It's called The Echoes of a Disharmonic Evensong. And it's kind of like Appalachian black metal a little bit. Yeah.
This is a category I did not know existed.
It's very a very cool. Subgenre of a subgenre.
This is great. Yeah.
It's a pretty good album. If you put it on and listen to it with headphones, especially if it's like dark and dreary out, it's pretty good.
Which it is right now. Nice. It is very dark and dreary out. It definitely is. Snowing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alicia, what would your Music Corner submission be?
I'm here to make the previous two sound excellent right now because I really haven't thought through this at all. But we can go with the song that's currently stuck in my head, which I think I've recommended before. It's called Dance While the Sky is Crashing Down. My only real explanation is I've been learning it on guitar and it's been pretty fun to kind of play. Well, I've been playing a lot of guitar recently and the chords of the song are extremely straightforward and really not much to it, but there are all these little kind of cool instrumental accents that just add a lot of flair to it. And it's kind of fun to try and figure out, like figuring out the personality of a song that I don't think even has guitar in the studio version, but, yeah, it's been fun to play around with, and it's currently playing on repeat in my head.
Nice. Is learning guitar, well, sorry, like playing more guitar, do you feel like, is that like a good like rehab thing for you in terms of like motor neuron stuff?
Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah,
nice. So for some background, I played a lot of music growing up. It was sort of like the center of my identity until I was like 18, where I fully quit all instruments for, you know, about a decade. And then started again last, I guess, right around a year ago, just because I needed something to do that wasn't going to involve me hitting my head ever. Mm. That's extremely unlikely while sitting playing guitar.
Unless you're really, really frustrated. That's what I would be doing. I would be hitting my head against the wall.
I do have moments of extreme frustration, but no head hits yet, thankfully. And it's just something I can like put time and energy into each day. And that's been pretty rewarding. It's fun too to have something that I can like put energy into and actually progress in noticeable ways, and that I guess keeps me coming back every day. So
when you broke your pinky finger, which which hand was that on, and is it the fret hand?
It was on my right hand, and it doesn't affect it at all.
Cool, nice.
Which is amazing.
Because real kick in the
hard because the pinky is, I would say that's been the most painful part of my injury. Mm. At least like if we're ignoring the mental and emotional sides of it, just because, well, that is the only part where I still like regularly have pain and kind of like more pain than I want. But I pretty much don't have to use it at all on my strumming hand, so that's pretty great. I do like a fair amount of finger picking, which uses I guess the four more dominant fingers on that hand, but not so much the pinky, which is ideal.
Super cool. Well, I'm glad the music's coming along.
Thanks. I am too.
And we will leave it there. Thank you very much for listening to this week's Pink Bite Podcast, and we will catch you next time.